bring in Glenn Healy, our NHL insider, the Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We know two things. One, the Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup Parade will be at 11 a.m. this morning, and we'll have it on Sportsnet Ontario because it's always a beautiful day for a parade. And two, their owner has already said they will go to the White House if they're invited. Let's bring in Glenn Healy, our NHL insider and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. How you doing, Mr. Healy?
Been to the White House myself.
Have you?
It was a very memorable day back in 1995, yeah, after we won the Cup with the Rangers. And Bill Clinton was the president.
Mm-hmm.
As he was walking towards the Oval Office, kind of looked, there was a bunch of us, Kevin Lowe, myself, Jay Wells, and it was like, hey, can we get a picture? And immediately I just kind of jumped right beside him. So it was like me and him arm in arm.
There you go.
There you go. A Scottish guy.
You and Slick Willie.
Hold of the moment. But he actually put his security kind of group and said, take him for a tour. Show him everything.
Wow.
It was quite unique, quite interesting, just a special, special day.
Yeah, see, I don't want to get started on the whole going. I have this thing about, well, we'll talk about it a bit. I have this thing about going to see the president. Like, as a lefty, of course, people would think that my initial reaction is you don't go anywhere near the White House.
Yeah,
but
this,
you know,
this one's unique. This president's unique.
He is unique, but there's something else, too. And, you know, and I'm trying to remember who in the Boston Red Sox it was that said it. It certainly wasn't Curt Schilling. It was somebody with a brain. It might have been Jason Veritek talked about how you are going to show respect to the office and the people who have held it, as well as the people who will hold it, as opposed to the guy there. In other words, you go to the White House, you may be thinking of JFK. You may be thinking of Nixon. You may be thinking of Clinton. You may be thinking of Obama. And I've always kind of felt that way. It's like I may not agree with the prime minister, but if the prime minister invites me to come see him, damn right I'm going to go see him because out of respect for the office. That's just me, though.
Yeah, and you know, there's the history there, too, just, you know, Dolly Madison's China, and you've got still the charred remains outside of one of the doors from when the White House was on fire. Mm-hmm. There's just so much history that...
We set it on fire, didn't we?
The office, for sure.
Didn't we set it on fire?
We
Canadians?
Did, yeah. Thank you very much. It was all us. Can't believe they let us in. I've got a really kind of a cool picture with us with the Stanley Cup and Bill Clinton and everybody gathered around. And you look at the picture, there's a little guy on the right-hand side of the picture, not even kind of in it, but he's kind of around the picture. And if you look close, it's Gary Bettman. His very first year as commissioner of the National Hockey League. I can guarantee you all these years later, he's in the picture. Probably is right beside the cup, beside the president.
You know what would be great? If the president booed him when he went into the White House.
Yeah, that probably would happen. I could just imagine that, yeah.
So, that would be fun.
But you know what? Just for all these players that get that opportunity from small towns in Canada, small towns in Finland and Sweden, it's a special, special moment.
Absolutely.
And it drives me crazy when people want to make political statements around that day, because it is about winning, it's about the team, it's about tradition, it's about all that stuff. And the Pittsburgh Penguins have done it again.
As we predicted. Oh, so many months ago.
Yeah, I was the first.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll show that in the first intermission.
You know what we need now is we need the Penguins and the Blackhawks to meet next year to decide who is the Stanley Cup champion of all champions of the salary cap era. It is remarkable that the Penguins have been able to do this, just as much as it's remarkable that the Blackhawks have been able to keep that string of excellence going, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too. When you talk about the salary cap era, most players in the NHL, in fact, pretty much all, have never played in an era other than a salary cap era.
That's true.
So, I mean, that's kind of a thing of the past. This is what they've all kind of looked towards. I think when they put the salary cap in, I really believe that they thought there'd be teams that would race to the top. There'd be teams that would just stay at the midpoint. And there'd be teams that would just be the bottom sellers, and we're never going to go, we're a budget team, and that's it. I don't think they ever really fully realized that most teams are just going to race to that cap and try to make it as competitive and make the team as competitive as possible. And that's kind of what's happened. And thus you enter escrow.
Mm. The lovely world of escrow. Is this team at Pittsburgh, have they got a shot at doing this again next year?
Yes. You know, you look at Crosby and just how he carried the team on his shoulders, and Malkin, you know, when he's probably one of the most complete players when you're going to build a player and say, I need size, I need strength, I need this, I need that. Yeah, he's got it all. And they've got the goaltending and. I think, though, the big uncertainty for a lot of teams this season is going to be, what's the team going to look like coming out of expansion drafts? And what's the team going to look like when it comes to, you know, the Washington Capitals, where they've got all their free agents they've got to sign and players that are, you know, eligible for arbitration? There's so many kind of intangibles this summer that we can't quantify till the summer ends. And then we look back and say, okay, they're pretty much the same complete team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the expansion draft didn't hurt them too much. Pretty much got everybody signed. Then we can say, yes, absolutely. But I don't know what Washington's going to look like. It could be a train wreck come the end of this summer. I don't know what some of the other teams in the league are going to look like. So this is a summer of uncertainty and a summer that we haven't had since the 90s, where we had our last expansion draft.
What are you expecting out of this expansion draft, Glenn?
I expect that the Vegas is going to get some pretty good players,
mm-hmm.
which is totally different than when Anaheim picked me in the expansion draft.
Well,
there was a whole bunch of nobodies available. They're going to have a chance to pick some really good players, a chance to pick some really good players to trade them. I expect lots of activity before the draft. This is a very unique year, one that we have not had, and I'm sure there's a lot of uncertainty amongst a lot of teams in the NHL.
If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, how are you approaching this draft? And you know, you've got some decisions to make, obviously, about a couple of players. It seems as if you're probably, if you're the Leafs and you're looking at your roster, you're probably going to end up losing or giving up a youngish forward, probably from the ranks of the Marlies, as opposed to anything else.
Yeah, I don't think that this expansion draft affects their vision, their game plan, the roadmap that they're going down in any way. Because they're big guys, the ones that we've talked about all year, from September right to today, there's been no chance of anything moving with those guys. And again, this draft, when they go to the podium, they're looking again to improve their team just the way they've done it. I don't think they're deviating in any way from their plan. Could they deviate in a way to get them better? Yeah, I think the summer could be interesting for the Leafs because they've got lots of assets. But this expansion draft, unlike with some of the other teams that have veterans that you are not wanting to part with, it's not the case for the Leafs.
You know, one of the things that intrigues me about expansion drafts is with the no movement clauses and things of that nature. You know, you have players being asked to waive no movement clauses or players, you know, essentially the paperwork involved in freeing up a guy for the expansion draft. But then you have a guy like Dion Phaneuf. And, you know, I know people's first reaction is going to be, well, you know, come on, you got to do it for the team, yada, yada, the team doesn't want you. But I think that kind of shortchanges the importance of no movement clauses, doesn't it, for players?
I think those clauses should be honored from both sides.
Yes.
I don't think the player should ever be able to waive it. I don't think the club should ever be able to ask him to move it.
I agree.
It should be the same with regards to salary.
Yep.
Right? Once you agree to a salary, that's your salary.
Mm-hmm.
That's your story. You don't go in and redo it. Let's do a do-over. Let's have a mulligan. No. It should be they should be honored in the exact same method. So if the player takes it, and I get it, where, you know, hey, player gets in a situation, coach doesn't like him, I want to get out of here, I can waive it. No, you can't. You can't waive it. So don't take it if you don't want to waive it.
Mm-hmm. And don't give it if
you're not going to honor it.
You're not going to honor it, exactly.
Yeah, totally. And so that, you know, you put the player in an awful position because, you know, from a fan standpoint, they're going to say, oh, you selfish, you know, look at you. It's all about you. Well, it shouldn't be. It should be about both sides. Both sides agreed to a contract. And, you know, that's the frustrating thing, I think, with the CBA, right? You have all kinds of, you know, grievances with the CBA, and you wonder to yourself, well, why? I mean, both sides signed the document. Why mm-hmm. is there, you know, issues on both sides? But there always is. But I think you sign something, honor it, and move forward with what you've signed.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Marc-Andre Fleury will be the goaltender for the Vegas Golden Knights?
I was in charge of that team, I would be grabbing them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you want to get competitive early, get your fan base engaged. You want to find a way to win on any given night. The only way to do it in this NHL is to have a goaltender who's not playing dodgeball and one who can stop the puck. And that's a guy that you definitely know can stop the puck, can give you a chance to win every night. And probably, you know, last year I had a great chat with Marc-Andre towards the end of the year. I kind of felt bad for him in a way, right? Because here was a guy who had lots of pride and, you know, taken the team to the Stanley Cup and done what he had done and had the year that he had last year, not this year, but even 2 years ago, where he's the best player on the team, and he was just kind of put to the curb on a Thursday. Kind of like, we got a new shiny penny, so we really don't need you. You know, he'd be practicing with a heart rate monitor just so that they would make sure that he's getting his heart rate up high mm-hmm. enough that he would stay in shape. And, you know, that's hard for an athlete. And so from my standpoint, I'd look, this is a fresh start for him. This would be enthusiastically something that I'm sure he's going to want to be part of. I don't think he wants to sit and watch anymore.
Right.
That's just me looking at him at the end of his career.
Well, and you know, you look at a guy who's he's won Stanley Cups. His reputation in the game is solidified. He didn't need to solidify it this year, but it was solidified this year, I think, by the manner in which he handled the reappearance of Matt Murray. And you know, you talk to people around the game, and he seems to be just about everybody's favorite person in the game. So if you're Marc-Andre Fleury, you can go to Vegas. You can live the good life, and you've really, I mean, you're playing with house money at this point, so to speak, in your career. You're playing with a lot of house money. And, you know, and who knows, if he has a good year, maybe somebody who's a Stanley Cup contender comes along at the deadline, I don't know, and says, hey, we need another goalie. Let's take a shot at this guy. Or maybe he has two good years and they do it next year.
There is lots of options for a player who can play and still has lots left in the tank. And that would be the definition of Marc-Andre. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. And there are worse places to land than Las Vegas. I think the guys that end up playing there look at the fan base, look at the, you know, just being all new, all special, right from day one, an owner who's fully committed, that's going to be a pretty good place to play.
I want us to focus back a little bit to the final. What were your takeaways from the final in terms of how the game was played and by that I mean, are there going to be any long-term ramifications of things that happened in that series? Was, you know, with teams kind of perhaps having an aha moment when it comes to building around a defense core or how you use your goalie or even rules, anything like that? Was there any sort of aha moment, do you think, in that series for the NHL or for its teams?
Well, I think they probably looked at Nashville and looked at an organization that was, you know, pretty much dead and done and almost on the move. I mean, Basile had the team and was already selling season tickets in Hamilton before he even, mm-hmm. before he even moved it. And I always believed Nashville was just a special place just because I'd done games there, and it was certainly exciting to go to a place like that. And then you look at, like, you know, what the crowd outside, inside, just that whole energy that was built around this run for them. And if not for maybe a goaltender who struggled in the last 2 weeks of this season, if not for some injuries, the Nashville Predators could have been the Stanley Cup champ.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Pittsburgh was the team that was the dominant team in any way, other than, you know, you've got, you know, fate wasn't on their side. And, you know, you look at a guy like Patrick Hornquist, who pretty much ended the season for the Nashville Predators, and there's a guy that they picked the last pick of the draft and then right. traded him. It's just so many kind of enticing storylines to me. Not so much the games and the neutral zone trap and the matchups and all that garbage, but just the storylines amongst the game. And if I'm another team in the NHL and I'm looking at this story this season, I'm saying this could be me next year. We could be the Nashville Predators. We could be the Pittsburgh Penguins. The potential is there for any team to do what Nashville did this year, or for any team, you know, to kind of take that run with, you know, a group that you wouldn't say is dominant. You know, probably at the beginning of the year, would anyone have picked Nashville to be the team to go to Stanley Cup final? No, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have. But they did, and that could be you next year. And so that's what I take from it. Any team who's watching, it could be you.
And the thing with Nashville is, I don't think it's Carolina. Like, this has got legs. You know, the crowds were enthusiastic before they went to the Stanley Cup. You know, they may not have been lining the street for games, but the crowds were enthusiastic before that. And it's not necessarily an old team, a team that needs to be disassembled. But Glenn, one thing I would ask you, you know, Pekka Rinne has now gone through a Stanley Cup final where he did not play well on the road. And, you know, one particular arena in Pittsburgh. Has his status there changed at all?
Well, I would say that they will do exactly what the Leafs are doing, which is to continue to improve this team through the draft. They are not going out and spending to get a new goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they would probably, if you would ask them, they would say the only reason we got there was because of him.
Right.
And you could say that for the first three rounds, this guy had Conn Smythe written all over his name. And so I don't think they're about to bail on a guy who got them to the dance. You know, we can analyze it and say he got to the dance and there was not a lot left in the tank. That's fair to say. I think that'd be pretty accurate. And I think, you know, Ron McLean said it best when, you know, he was doing his on ice with Grapes right before the start of the game. And he talked about how 270 days ago the puck was dropped for the World Cup. And
yeah.
That struck me as, wow, like it's almost a full calendar year
yep.
that these guys have been playing at such a high level. That's a long time. And so that struck me too. So maybe just, you know, with the World Cup, with all the stuff that's gone on, with the year that it was, with a team that's not necessarily, you know, the best suited to just go into cruise control, maybe just he ran out of gas, and so did the Predators, and so did the way with injuries for that hockey club where they just weren't going to beat a Pittsburgh team that had been there before.